Australian True Crime. The live show is coming.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
This is a true crime podcast, as the title suggests. So please consider this your warning that it's not suitable for children, and it probably will contain content that may be triggering to some people. Also, it's an Australian true crime podcast, so Australian Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander listeners should be aware it may contain the voices of deceased people.
The producers of this podcast recognise the traditional owners of the land on which it's recorded. They pay respect to the Aboriginal elders past, present, and those emerging.
In episode 342 of Australian True Crime, we met a man called Glenn, who told us about the abuse he suffered in a so-called youth refuge in King's Cross in the 1980s. The place in question was called the Homeless Children Association Refuge, and it was run by one Simon Davies, who was convicted of historical child sex offences against two boys in 2022. And one of those boys was Glenn. After that episode was published, we were contacted by a woman named Marie, who said she had more information about that story that she wanted to share. And Marie is our guest today. We begin by finding out about Marie's early life. As you'll hear, she comes from a very different background to the boys who ended up at the Homeless Children's Association Refuge.
I was living in Waitara at the time, which is a very leafy North Shore suburbs. My parents got divorced when I was like 3 or 4. So I didn't really know my dad. He was in the Navy. And I think because my mother was very definitely not into my dad at all, she was very negative about him. You know, it was quite terrible, actually. So there was me and my twin brother. She had some sort of form of like narcissism, or there was a lot of anger with my mom. She used to like tell us, look, when you're 14, you can leave because legally I don't have to look after you. And she would talk a lot about that.
14?
Yes.
Okay.
But I was like 6 or 7 or 8. She would always talk about that. That was a narrative. So she already had in her head that we were leaving. So I was living under the threat of homelessness from a very young age. And then my stepfather comes in. When he came in, our lifestyle changed. We moved to a bigger house in Waitara. And he was a teacher. So his job, he taught at...
Are they flash schools? I'm not from Sydney. So what sort of schools are they?
Private. So it's like Toorak.
Okay.
Or what's the Queensland? Auchenflower. Actually, it's a lot of the schools where the Royal Commission into Child Abuse found a lot of predators. I couldn't get any recourse through the Royal Commission for Child Abuse because the abuse happened in my bedroom. I mean, obviously I gave you a bit of a picture of my mother. So he obviously picked her because he wouldn't sleep with his students because they're all from wealthy areas. So I was an ideal victim because it was obviously a very stressful house. It's very chaotic. Also, she was very isolating. She wouldn't let us stay at friends' places or have friends. So he just made a beeline for her. Now, I can't speak for my brother and I won't, but I definitely experienced sexual abuse from him from the ages of 8 until 10. And then I did get to leave because I had to go and live with my dad in Brisbane. I think it was 11 to like 13. But when I came back, it was 1984. So I was in year 9. And my mum had broken up with him. So I had moved back to live with her.
So when you came back and you're 13, you're nearing the threshold. Did she hold true to it? Was she still saying?
Well, she did it using the fact that I told her about my stepfather. And she was leaving him and she asked me, why don't you like him? What is it? And I told her. And then she confronted him and made it really dramatic, as was my mother's wont, with this knife. And he's going, well, I just patted her on the bum, you know. And she liked playing with her brush, you know, with her hair, you know, this kind of crap. And then she went and told everyone at the pub with her new boyfriend. So I was like, rolling my eyes because I was still a teenager. All this stuff's going on. And then I wrote a story and Mrs. she just put me in the office and said it was inappropriate. They would have known who I was writing about because he was part of their school community.
So you disclosed in a story.
Yeah.
And they punished you.
Yeah. And then my mum is like, okay, would you like to leave school? I mean, yeah, I'm 14. Of course I'd like to leave school. That's how I ended up on the streets of Oxford Street at 14.
So where did you go to first? Where did you land? You got to try and find somewhere to live.
I wasn't even thinking that. I had a bag with all my posters and my 3 favourite dresses and I just went out and partied my head off. And then I'd meet a lot of gay men who were like, would you like to stay with us? And that's how I survived. That was my world and I liked it. And then you mix all the drug dealers and then you deal with the pimps and the... Now, I wasn't part of that. One of the guys there said, well, why don't you get into, you know, sex work? And I'm like, oh, no, I'm 14. I'm going to uni. That's what I'm doing. And I didn't mean it in a judgmental way, but I was just very matter of fact about it.
So then when did you cross paths with this group of people, Simon Davies and his cohorts?
That was interesting because when I didn't meet him until 1987, 88. So I'd been, and I had not gone back home. And I'd been living pretty much on my own. So I was 18 at this time and I was at Randwick TAFE because I was doing my HSC. But housing was an issue. I was always moving. Obviously, I had terrible interpersonal skills. I obviously wasn't getting any support I needed. So Simon Davies' youngest sister, we were really good mates and we were very similar and she liked to party and she was fun. We used to go to rap parties together. She's great, like an amazing human being, very smart as well. I think I was renting with someone I didn't like and she said, oh, well, come and stay with me. And that is, then I walk into this house. He's living in Burwood, which is near Strathfield. At that time, that's where a lot of the private schools were as well. It's very leafy. Simon was there. I think he had another place where he had the boys, but he moved.
Yeah, I'm starting to wonder if this was his parents' house.
Well, his dad, because his mother had died. Yeah.
That's right. So now, timeline-wise, he lost the refuge somehow and he moved back to his family home. But when I say somehow, because I remember when we spoke to Glenn, the court still placed him with Simon as his legal guardian after to go and live in this house with his family after the refuge was no more. So he wasn't in trouble for his dealings with children.
No. Well, I mean, I think it sounds like I'm not really into conspiracy theories or anything like that, but I definitely have met a lot of pedophiles.
Okay. That's quite a sentence.
Yeah.
Go on.
I have met many of them. And it's not a conspiracy the way that they work. Like, it's just this weird, it's like going into an organization that's toxic. It's a culture that enables this behavior. Now, it was a brick house. The mother had died and he was living with his two young, much, much younger sisters. I think his younger sister, who was my friend, was my age, 18. He must have been like 30.
Yeah, he was definitely an adult. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And then his other sister was only like 20.
How did you feel about being in the home? Were you happy to be back in the leafy suburbs and with a roof over your head?
Yeah, I was. And also, I guess, because the sisters were more my age. But then I noticed there were boys there. But there were two classes of boys. So first, the boys living there, one was Simon's, and I'm saying this is on a podcast, but I'm doing this thing with my fingers, abbreviating. He's a boyfriend who was younger than me. So I think at the time, 15. He became quite close to me, got a little crush on me. I was like, you're a kid, you know, I mean, 18, 15. But he say, I'm not gay. This is so confusing. And it broke my heart. It really broke my heart. And anyway, so then another big part of this whole household, Simon made money from tutoring rich young teenagers. So you'd have this household where these working class homeless kids lived. He made money from them. I think he made money as a carer. I think I remember his sister telling me that. And I think he made money from looking after his sisters too until they turned 18. And then these boys would turn up with their little boater hats and their uniforms and have these political arguments and debates. And Simon would be the, you know, everyone would be just, he's like most pedophiles, very charming. Not all pedophiles, but this kind of pedophile, the one I've met a lot of, the educated one. And everybody's like revolving around him, like love the sound of his own voice. And interesting, and I do want to add this, my image of this is you've got all of the private school boys beautifully dressed and then the homeless kids, you know those short shorts that young men wore in the 70s, 80s?
I do, like those little stubbies or, but I know. Really cheap cotton shorts, yeah.
That's all they had on, no top.
Wow.
And then we'd have these parties. He'd hold these parties and he'd wear this little boater hat, like Bride's Head Revisited. And so there'd be all his friends and they were like intellectuals, judges, journalists and all the grown men and then the private school boys and then us TAFE kids, TAFE people, all different ages. And these are kids. So that was what he would do with these boys. He would... Yeah, they were always drunk. They were always out of it. He's meant to be looking after them. One night at the party, the guys, his friends, the adults, were groping and making sort of offensive things to the boys. And I just went in and said, get your hands off them. They're kids. Like, I just went off my head. And I wrote about it in my diary. And then after that, I probably left. Because I think I became a nanny in Bellevue Hill after that.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I obviously probably ran, like, just was like, I got to get out of here. And I got into uni. I got into Sydney Uni. And then I went off and I had a graduate certificate in public relations at UTS. I didn't think about him until I was working. And so I was working social justice in their communications and PR. And I saw his name and go, what the fuck? And I'm going, what is he's advising Tony Blair? What the? When he was in Australia before he left, he set up the Australian Privacy Foundation. So I'm just like, fuck this. Like, I was shocked. I didn't really get to terms with the abuse, the sexual abuse and trauma until my 40s, but well, that's another story. But at that time in my 30s, I was very ambitious. Let's just say looking good and being ambitious probably got me to 40. But unfortunately, though, I had two lives. I had my working life, but then I had this other life, and it was very destructive, and it couldn't sustain.
Yeah, they collide eventually, don't they?
Yeah. So I was having a full-on break. Like, I lost everything, like everything, having to stay in boarding houses and having very bad mental health issues and having to learn to deal with that. So it's been an odyssey. I'm out of it now. But it was really interesting. So I had sort of said farewell to the survivor and to the sister, because that was part of my, like, I can't do pedophiles anymore. I can't do trauma. I was 46 at the time. I was in Brisbane at that time. So here I am, the context of this. I'm like, oh, good. I'm free of pedophiles. I can get on with my life. Knock, knock, knock. It's the police and it's Simon Davies' case. I looked and looked and looked for the diaries. And I must have lost them. And they wanted photos because I had photos as well of the party. It's such a shame. I used to take photos of everything. I had photos of Simon at the party with boys, but I must have lost them. I've moved 57 times. I'm 54 years old. That was how I got involved in the case. And then they disappear. Off they go. Never hear anything until years later. I'm what is it? Like 2021. I'm 51 years old. And it's on the television, and he's been caught. So he went off. He had his career in the UK. He did the whole Tony Blair thing. He set this thing up. He got tipped off, and he went into hiding. So that was kind of the end of my journey, and then I went off, and it's been a lot better, actually, since then, and now I'm fine. But I guess this is why we're talking. Why isn't there a podcast about this dude? Why isn't there more digging? Why the media is, like, why are they still talking about him? Like, he's this
privacy advocate.
It's weird. The thing is, if we weren't children to them, we were just lower beings. I just can't get over it. And I'm wondering why the media aren't picking it up. Because he has a board. There's a board of the Australian Privacy Foundation. Because part of me is like, I wonder how all these people, like, these are like academics and doctors, and they must have all had thoughts about this, what had happened, and all the UK. Now, I'm not saying that they knew, but how do they feel about it, you know?
It's obviously a fascinating story. We've heard from two people now, and both of you have a lot of details from your own perspective, but you've opened up so many other questions. If anyone listening has any more information, please, we'd love to hear your story as well in relation to this story. If you need support after listening to this podcast, you can call Lifeline on 13 11 14 or contact 1-800-RESPECT on 1-800-737-732 or 1-800-RESPECT.org.au. Indigenous Australians can contact 13 Yarn on 13 92 76 or 13yarn.org.au. Thank you for downloading this episode of Australian True Crime. We'll be back next week.
Small details are big surfaces. Tight corners are odd shapes. Flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
Australian True Crime. The live show is coming.